The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count for your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hey, this is Emily.
And this is Bridget.
And you're listening to Stuff Mom Never Told You. Now, today we've got a really important conversation about the new war on women's health. We're going to unpack the many new fronts on this war that seems to be coming at us from every angle now that is really focused on stripping away rights that we thought, as women, we'd already fought and won many, many decades ago now. But unfortunately, the new administration and the Republican-controlled Congress is really making stripping back or pulling back on women's reproductive health a priority on many other levels. This is a global and national issue that has pretty big ramifications, which is why Bridget and I are so excited that we have Amber J. Phillips to talk through how she's advocating through Advocates for Youth, her organization that she's with. And like, you're going to hear a really interesting conversation in just a few moments on what we can do to make sure that we don't go in the way, way back machine together. However, since the initial recording of our interview with Amber, as most things do, as things go here in Washington, D.C., this front, this sort of battle has waged on. And whenever we're talking through things like legislation, there's a pretty high likelihood that things are going to change really quickly. So we wanted to add in here an update on the fact that things have changed a little bit with the Republican action around repealing and replacing Obamacare since we first recorded our conversation with Amber. And make a note so that you know that this is an ever-evolving issue that we have to stay vigilant over.
So the newest update is on May 4th, the House voted to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, by a narrow vote of 217 to 213. This vote puts millions of Americans one step closer to losing their health care. If this bill, in fact, did become law, it could be a real disaster for women's health.
And I don't know about you, but this is true for me, because I, since becoming an entrepreneur and being over the age of 26, have relied on the exchange for my health care that I couldn't really get anywhere else.
Totally. Although the ACA repeal bill does not specifically repeal the no copay birth control benefit of Obamacare, it could still make birth control less affordable by reducing financial assistance to purchase coverage, eventually ending the Medicaid expansion, and making big cuts to the Medicaid program. So collectively, this would result in fewer women having access to coverage. Furthermore, the Obamacare Repeal Act restructures and slashes the Medicaid program, and those cuts would result in hurting women, disproportionately women of color, and result in them losing critical access to care. The Obamacare Repeal Act is also a big attack on coverage for abortion. The bill includes a provision that, quote-unquote, defunds Planned Parenthood. The bill also prohibits financial assistance from being used to purchase a private plan on or off the marketplace if it covers abortion. As a result, marketplace plans will not be able to cover abortions outside of rape, incest, or life endangerment to the woman. And so that's really where we're at.
So this is an evolving topic. As we know, this is a bill that's been passed in the House as of this recording. And when the Senate comes back from recess, they are expected to undertake this issue. We do anticipate that the Senate will make major amendments to this bill. That's as they typically do. And hopefully, if we call our senators and make sure they know that we are not down with this major attack on Obamacare, specifically in the ways that it affords women equal access to reproductive care and health care, especially poor women on Medicaid, then there is a better chance, I think, of us making sure the Senate chills this bill out at the very least, if not rejecting it outright.
So call your senators.
Call your senators and know that, you know, the podcast interview with Amber ahead is full of information around how extreme these measures writ large, whether it's coming out of the White House or coming from Congress, are in terms of repealing and taking us back when it comes to the rights that women have been afforded here in the U.S. and the ways in which the U.S. has supported women abroad. So I hope you enjoy this great conversation we're going to have with Amber. Don't be too depressed. It's scary stuff, but we do make sure that we always leave you with actionable ways that you can make your voice heard. Because guess what? If we're not paying attention to this, who's going to pay attention to this? If we're not taking action on this, who's going to take action on behalf of our rights? We have to make our voices heard, and there are easy ways to do so, but hopefully Bridget, Amber, and I can break it down in a way that makes it really easy to understand, hopefully a little bit fun to listen to. It's always our goal, right, B?
Right.
And leave you with some steps that you can take to make the stuff better or make it go away and to really make your voice heard in your country. So enjoy. I think you're going to love Amber J. Phillips, and I hope you enjoy the rest of this conversation. We are so pumped today.
We're so pumped. Why are we pumped?
Because we have the marvelous, fabulous, one-of-a-kind Amber J. Phillips joining us in studio today.
Yay!
I'm so happy to be here. This is great.
I'm so pumped. We're so happy. You can make it.
Yay.
So Amber is the Senior Manager of Youth Leadership and Mobilization at Advocates for Youth. Mm. Amber, what is Advocates for Youth?
So Advocates for Youth is an amazing sexual health and reproductive rights organization that works to advance the life chances and the health of young people across this country. We educate providers, we educate people who work with young people, and most importantly, we work with young people. In my role, I work specifically with our Young Women of Color for Reproductive Justice Collective, which is a group of dynamic young women of color who care about, you know, ending reproductive oppression.
That's great.
And Amber is also the co-host of a really amazing podcast called The Black Joy Mixtape. Amber, tell us about the Black Joy Mixtape.
So on the Black Joy Mixtape, I'm not only Amber J. Phillips, I am the high priestess of Black Joy. with my amazing co-host Jasmine Walker, the king of the South, and we like to refer to ourselves as rappers without bars because we got all the commentary and fire words around politics, pop culture, and of course Black women and anything Beyonce and the entire Knowles Carter family has going on.
Oh my god.
Okay, so first of all, Emily and I need to get nicknames for like podcast.
Yes, you do.
We need to get on that.
Yes. Yeah. It's so fun. It really allows you to go into who you actually are, which my friends dubbed me the High Priestess of Black Joy because
that is such
a thing to be known.
fitting nickname.
Thank you.
All I can think of is Foxy Cleopatra. Yes, right now,
it's all those things together.
Oh yeah,
it's all those things together, and it's because here in DC, I host a lot of Black Joy turnips at my house. I have friends over, as well as I'm just really committed to like us finding our joy in our spaces because Black Joy is honestly heavily policed.
It is policed.
People are arrested for not putting out cigarettes fast enough or having their music out too loud. So we're all about not only celebrating that, but celebrating in a way that's free of oppression and just Blacks only spaces. And then some, we think everybody can have some. It's great. Mm.
I love that. So when I first met Amber, in a former life, I used to run boot camps for activists and organizers in the progressive left, teaching them how to, you know, use digital skills to be these badass campaigners. And so one thing to know about this is that it's a contest, right? And so it's like a mock election where you
Which is not very mock at all.
It's not very mock because it gets very real.
It gets very real.
It gets
especially when you're dealing with someone like me.
Especially when you're dealing with someone like Amber. And so I'll never forget. So, you know, it's a mock election. Amber was like, oh, well, we're going to win. because I don't lose. And I remember thinking, like, would it, like, wow. She doesn't lose? Amber, what were the results of that? Where you thought,
we won! Of course we won! Yeah. So funny because it's so true because I was that intense as a young
she
person.
She was a little woke.
She was a baby woke.
I was baby woke.
Wokelet.
But had no gender analysis back then, of course.
I mean, none of us did.
No, well, we didn't.
I have to give a little RIP to NOI, first of all.
Oh, yeah, big ups.
These elections. And also, just I couldn't go without saying that you are sitting with another NOI campaign, mock campaign winner.
Yes. Right, oh, yo, I
Wonder
won
Woman.
Too.
No way.
We're all the winners.
Yes. We have, we love Amber, which is why we could literally talk all day.
I will distract the hell out of everybody.
I can see that. It's already happening.
I mean, it's good. You have the best kinds of distractions.
The best kinds of distractions.
We have some pretty heavy stuff.
It's a heavy day.
As light as we all can be, and we know we could chat all day about NOI, RIP, we are here to talk about a very serious topic, which is the new war on women's health. What is that all about?
So with an incoming administration, with President Trump, as much as it pains me to say that, but he is our president.
I will not be calling him
Amber
by that
will not
title.
Be calling him President Trump. That is fine. We really have a kind of emboldened attacks on women's health and reproductive justice. And so this episode is really about giving you guys a state of play, sort of where we're at with that. Mm. And what can be done?
Because there are many new affronts happening right now. There are many new ways in which women's reproductive rights and health for women, not just here in the United States, but globally, is under attack. And I think we're gonna break it down step by step because there is important legislation happening. There are important policies and politicians being sort of voted in Washington, D.C., that we have to stay vigilant about. We have to keep our eyes on. We can't gloss over it because there is a lot of news happening today, and we all have to preserve our sanity in mm-hmm. one form or another. But we want to make sure that when it comes to women's health, we are keeping tabs on these new fronts and what we can really do about them. So I'm so excited that you're here, Amber, to talk through those fronts with us.
So let's dive into where we are, just a general state of play. So very, very early into Trump's administration, he introduced this expansion of what they call the global gag rule. And so if you don't know what that is, basically it used to be called the Mexico City policy, and it was first put into effect by Ronald Reagan in 84. And basically this rule requires that foreign NGOs that receive family planning assistance from the U.S. to certify that they will not perform or promote any method of abortion as family planning. And so essentially, to break that down into layman's terms, what that means is it kind of forces NGOs, when they're doing this work overseas, to adhere to a very strict, like, anti-abortion agenda. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter if an abortion could save someone's life. It doesn't matter if this has negative or deadly impacts on someone. They are bound to not even mention abortion.
Or to choose to forego the funding that right. comes through this policy. And this is a policy that, since 84 with Reagan, has been enacted very early on in mm-hmm. every Republican's presidency. Right. So it's sort of this clearly hyper-partisan flip of the switch that happens when we switch from Democratic presidencies to Republican presidencies, which is important to note because there's clear data we're going to dive into later between what happens when this global gag rule goes into effect or the Mexico City policy goes into effect mm-hmm. versus the Democratic administrations for which, you know, remove that.
Right. So the thing that's most interesting about the global gag rule is that it even says that even if you aren't providing abortions, you're literally not allowed to recommend it as a reasonable option for someone, from my understanding of it. So it's like literally a gag. It's literally a gag on getting people the information they need, connecting them to the services that they need, even if you cannot provide those services because of the funding that you get. So
when does withholding information ever a great idea?
Never a good idea.
Right? Like, this is anti-freedom of speech, quite frankly.
It's anti a lot of things.
Right.
And I think the difference between this administration, too, is they actually extended it to make it, like, permanent, right? Isn't that what happened?
Yeah.
So even though we switch back and forth on you know, under a Democratic administration, it's not a thing. But then under a Republican administration, it is a thing. The thing that I find the most hilarious about this Republic, our new administration, is that they are unapologetically taking some of the most oppressive laws and policies and kind of hammering them into stone. They're taking effects that will, they're thinking about their futures, right? They're thinking about their futures beyond the White House, about what they do not want to happen here. And it's wild. And it definitely is an attack globally on people who access abortion
and
care.
And the poorest people.
Yep. Always the poorest people.
And really what's scary is that this administration's enforcement of the global gag rule is even more extreme. It's rumored that they've widened the policy, they've widened the reach. What's especially troubling and concerning to advocates and journalists alike is the lack of transparency and clarity. Mm-hmm. There wasn't even a press release put out on this. At the last of our knowledge here, there's very few details that the administration has come out with. But what we have seen is that the executive action widens its scope significantly. Instead of just applying the gag rule to the pool of family funding that's impacted, it applies to, quote, all global health assistance furnished by all departments or agencies. That's $10+ billion, including AIDS prevention, infectious disease, maternal health, malaria, tuberculosis, nutrition. And that includes parts of the government funding that George W. Bush even excluded from the global gag rule.
Yeah, because I think, like, even under Bush, there was some understanding of the right. need to be a little bit, you know,
communicative, yeah, at least about this things. As an option.
Yeah, yeah, when you're dealing with people's lives.
Right.
That's really sad that looking back on Bush, you're like, man, he's seeming
less
and less.
The good old days.
But I'm still going to hold firm that he is the worst.
Right. So like, I don't like the rebranding. Yeah.
And, any of these the hugs with, yeah, Michelle with Michelle Obama tell you any differently. I will always remember Hurricane Katrina.
Yeah. Fair. So. Fair. Yeah. The rebranding and cutifying of George W. Yeah. Just because he laughs at Michelle Obama's jokes.
Hashtag never forget.
Never.
Fair. But it's also important, I think, here to make it explicit that the United States federal funding does not fund abortions, right, home or abroad. What we're really talking about here is any of the foreign aid that we have deemed essential, necessary, and in our national interest to put abroad, right, to make health globally, here and abroad, a priority, now restricts their ability as practitioners to even speak about abortion, to even talk about it as an option or mention it.
Right. So going back to this piece, yes, around who's impacted the most,
yeah,
by this,
yeah,
I'm someone who, I come into this work as a reproductive justice advocate, as someone who has been, who uses a reproductive justice lens on my work. This means reproductive justice, which is a phrase that was coined by folks like Loretta Ross and Sister Song, which is an amazing organization based in Atlanta, is that it's your right to parent a child, not have a child, and to raise those children in health and safe environments. Mm. So when we're having this conversation about funding around abortion, even though we had Roe v. Wade, which said, listen, everyone gets access to one of these. You all get access to one of these abortions should you need it. However, because of things like the global gag rule impacting international conversations around access, just the conversation,
right,
around access abortion, here in our country, the GOP and conservatives make it seem as though that there is government funding going towards abortion, but there isn't, because of a thing called the Hyde Amendment.
Right.
And the Hyde Amendment literally makes it so that no government funding can go towards abortion. So when you hear rumors about a Planned Parenthood using government funding for abortion, it's just simply not true. All those funds are separated out because the law literally requires it.
Right.
And even though there had been a push under the Obama administration, and then what we were hoping was for a different administration to actually repeal the Hyde Amendment so that low-income women, women of color, folks who are on government funding and government assistance can actually use their health care through the government to access the care that they need. Because right now they can't, and it doesn't look like that's going to happen anytime in the near future. So,
right.
Yeah,
it's
it definitely impacts us kind of differently.
Well, it impacts poor women,
yes,
disproportionately. And
definitely.
That's true abroad as well, where, you know, getting pregnant without planning it, right? Being pregnant can be a death sentence in certain parts of this world.
And we don't even have to go as far as Haiti. Black women here in America have very high rates of not being able to carry pregnancies to term. And then on top of that, not only are we stigmatized for access abortion, this piece around us, access abortion, there's stigma in carrying a child and getting the help you need with that. There's also stigma around having the babies. We have a lot of the Reagan administration. Yeah. They built a whole media campaign on Black women just like us of saying that we are welfare queens and we don't deserve access to government funding and all these different things. So it's kind of a double-edged sword, which is why I love to talk about it through a reproductive justice lens, because we can have a conversation around abortion, but we also need to talk about sterilization of Black women and women of color. We also need to talk about what it means for Black women, especially teen moms who have babies, to access the support that they need. And if we're not willing to support information around sexual health and reproductive rights, we're certainly not supporting people who are carrying those children and raising those children and making sure that those children are in health and safety, safe environments.
Right.
So. And I love the idea of thinking about it through that lens, where it's like, it is happening here. I think that Black women in the United States deal with this, and it's easy to think that, you know, this is a developed country, like we're not dealing with it in those ways, but we are. Like low-income Black women and women of color here in the States deal with this in a way that I feel like is disproportionately impactful in their lives. And it doesn't, and it seems like that conversation is a conversation that's difficult to have, and we're not having it subsequently.
Yeah.
What's scary is that there, and I understand this false impression that the pro-life movement has around the gag rule leading to less abortions in the world, right? So there is this underlying assumption from the pro-life movement that a global gag rule will actually reduce the number of abortions that occur.
True.
Right. Which I'm looking at research here that shows that abortion rates increased during Republican presidencies during which the gag rule was enforced and decreased during the Democratic presidencies over time. And this is abroad, more the data comes from countries abroad when the global gag rule was revoked. So even if you are coming at this lens saying we want to reduce abortion, increased access to family planning services and a whole suite of information, not to mention contraception, is actually the way forward in doing that.
So if you're genuinely interested in not having there be and having there be less abortions, this is not the way to do it, right? Like, I actually would argue that, like, abortions are abortions, and like, people are gonna have them, and people, like, it's not like
legally or not.
Correct. And I'm a big advocate for getting rid of the stigma around it. But if you genuinely believe that it's something that we should be advocating to have less of, this is not the way to do it. It doesn't make any sense.
If that were true, then we would have more comprehensive sex ed in all 50 states. And right now we don't. Actually, very few states have comprehensive sex ed, which is one of the things that Advocates for Youth works on, through social media work, through working with city level and state level folks to make sure that we have an idea what comprehensive sex ed looks like, not just for, and we have an idea what comprehensive sex ed looks like for all grade levels, like down from teaching kindergartners how to identify their different body parts up to teaching teens about their menstrual cycles or about consent
and
knowing how to use a condom. One of the things, I want to infuse this in, but one of the things that brought me to this conversation of talking about sex ed on a larger scale was you have, especially as a Black woman, you have folks like Nick Cannon, who got in trouble earlier this year for having all these views about who should access abortion and who shouldn't, and specifically targeting Black women, stating that, you know, that we are somehow, hurting our race by accessing abortion care, where I'm like, well, what? Nick Cannon, have you ever taught anybody how to put on a condom? Because that's where your part of this conversation actually comes in, because people access abortions for an array of different reasons. But if you actually cared, if this is your issue, then let's have a conversation about teaching Black men how to put on condoms, or how to give comprehensive sex ed to Black women about our menstrual cycles and how to actually chart them. Like, there's so much we don't know.
Men have to play a role
in sexual and reproductive health.
In
there
no,
is
no,
a
no,
role.
Contraception.
It doesn't come in on the abortion piece, I assure you.
All right. I think this is a good time for us to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the other fronts on this new war against women's health. So we'll be right back.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Tennessee just sounds perfect, whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
And we're back. And honestly, there are quite a few ways in which the Trump administration has quickly advanced major attacks against funding for women's health and reproductive justice. And I want to mention this briefly because I know there's lots of components that we want to cover in today's episode. But it's important to mention that the administration already announced and made cuts, significant cuts to the United Nations Population Fund, or the UNPF, which is a division within the United Nations more broadly, which we all know he doesn't have such a great opinion of, but it has a special focus on supporting reproductive health. Now, what's interesting here is, as we've clearly established, there is no evidence that any of the United States funding was going to make abortions possible, right? This wasn't going towards abortion funding. And yet the administration, on this rumor, on this myth around that, decided to ignore the advice of the State Department, the United States State Department, which advised at least doing a comprehensive study, or at least looking into it, before making an evidence-based cut. And instead, they cut that funding with little to no fanfare or explanation provided. So they didn't look into it. They have false reasons and sort of, you know, fake news behind their reasons for making these cuts. And yet, there they go. They were made.
It sounds right on point with how Donald has decided to
unilaterally.
Govern. Yes.
Unilaterally.
Like, let's get rid of the things that we thought no one could get rid of and not tell you about it until someone at Vox decides to write about
it.
Like, it's kind of crazy.
It is scary.
It's scary. And I think, again, it's like one of those things where I feel like these things are done with such a lack of transparency where, like, we don't find out until it's too late.
Yes.
And the news media can barely keep up.
Completely.
I think I said this off air, but like, they tried to get rid of the ethics committee first day.
That's when you know
January.
You're going to have a clean administration.
I mean, come on. Like, let's get rid
what
of anything that overshadows anything that we could
what
be doing.
What could go wrong?
Let's get rid of any voter protection committees, you know, people who check the ballot boxes. Let's get rid of that. And then just like, let's start moving it. Let's start moving things forward. So this is, I'm glad you are talking about it, because we need podcasts like this and folks like you all to actually explain what's happening to American people, because it's coming at us so quick. Mm. And we're going to look up and not actually know the extent of our rights in our own government, our own democracy. So
we're doing what we can, doing our best, doing our damnedest. And the reality is that there have been some checks and balances coming through. Thank you, founding fathers. Thank you, Constitution. Right. And we saw the Trump administration fail already when it came to repealing and replacing Obamacare, which is an important component to this fight.
Yeah. I mean, I think that you really see that as an organizing victory, because that, and we'll talk more about that kind of going forward, but you really got to see that as a victory for people who make noise in this country and sort of, like, you know,
advocate
for
make
things.
Their voices heard.
And I think what's so important to note about the whole ACA fight is that there was a provision in the Affordable Care provision in Trump's, you know,
what is it, like, the world's best healthcare policy,
whatever,
which was the actual name. There was an actual name to it that was like the global premier. It was like something ridiculously hyperbolic. But yeah, there was a provision in there to defund important organizations like Planned Parenthood, right? So Planned Parenthood came directly under attack and was in the center, the eye of the storm, when it came to the Trump administration's kind of half-baked healthcare policy, which got people riled up, got organizers riled up and rallying and making their voices heard. And I think that's part of the reason, has to do with the fact that so many women, myself included, have benefited directly from Planned Parenthood's extensive health services, well beyond reproductive health, but important reproductive health services as well.
I don't know how much of a personal story to share on that, but absolutely, because literally, as someone who grew up, I always have a hard time talking about this, but I don't mind, because I think there are a lot of women like me who, I grew up very Christian and Baptist. So my mom did a great job at explaining sexual health to me as best she could. And there's still so much shame and stigma attached to girls who have sex, that when you're in the throes of trying to figure it out, when you definitely should tell somebody to help you, you don't.
Right.
But I was always grateful for my Planned Parenthood, because the first time I had barely had sex, I was terrified, and we're like, what is a Plan B pill? Or like, where are all the things?
Yeah.
And I was grateful that we could go to our local Planned Parenthood, and they're like, also, here are condoms.
Yes.
Calm down. Like, you're doing the most. You were dry humping, and it's okay.
God, I have such a good story. It's so true, because think about how clueless a lot of us were. Like, I went to Catholic school. I didn't really get a comprehensive sex education at all.
Oh, wow.
And I distinctly remember, playing spin the bottle and thinking I was going to get, like, pregnant.
Are you
that.
Serious?
Yeah, like, we just didn't know.
No.
And do you really want, like, and this is another thing that, like, I am almost embarrassed. So this is a podcast on a
share and get
network,
somebody else free, girl.
Yes. On a network that's dedicated to science and research. I'm, like, embarrassed. I mean, I might, like, lose my job for admitting this.
Stop.
But up until I was in college, I thought that you couldn't get pregnant if the woman was on top. I literally thought that until I was 18 years old.
Oh my God.
I thought that.
Well, that's a real thing that people think, and it's important.
I got told that from, like, older girls in my class, and I was like, oh, they would know.
Jeez. So you're just out here on top.
I know.
Living your best life. My favorite moment of you actually know nothing, Amber Phillips, was when I told you I work for a sexual health and reproductive rights organization, and I think it was, I forget this actor's name, but he got throat cancer.
It's Catherine Zeta-Jones' husband.
Yes.
What's his name? It's driving me crazy.
Zeta-Jones, though.
We got to look it up. But Michael Douglas.
Michael Douglas.
Oh, yeah.
So Michael Douglas had gotten throat cancer, and there everyone was saying it was because of cunnilingus. And we were in our all-staff meeting, and they were like, yeah, Michael Douglas might have throat cancer from cunnilingus.
No.
And I'm like, what is cunnilingus? And everyone stopped and looked at me like, okay, so we're going to get you all of the booklets in the back. And then it was explained to me that cunnilingus is performing oral sex on a woman. And I was like, okay, well, I know what cunnilingus is, but I didn't know it was called cunnilingus. You know what I mean?
You didn't know it by its like government
name.
I
didn't know it by its government name. Oh, and I'm like, literally ran to my desk and read all these things. Like, what else don't you know? Like, you cannot be responsible for young people.
This is important stuff.
It is.
Yeah, basic education.
Totally. Like, speaking of stuff mom never told you.
That's what I thought the name of this show was. So I'm just being honest about my limitations.
And it's such a good reminder that all of us, especially when we're young and a little bit figuring, I don't want to say clueless, because we're figuring things out. There's a part of life when you got to figure things out.
Even if you're in your mid-20s.
Yes.
You know.
And Planned Parenthood is there to help you do that.
Yes,
and
they are.
For me, it was really important in college because my health insurance came through my mom. My mom works at a Catholic hospital.
Oh, wow.
Which has an exception, right, in that they are allowed to claim religious exemption from providing health coverage for their workers that covers contraceptives. And, of course, they don't perform abortion services there either. Mm. But what that meant for my mom's kid, a.k.a. me, being a 20-year-old in college, is that I was paying full price out of pocket, like $50+ a month for the birth control pill.
Wow.
And Planned Parenthood had financial subsidies for, like, I was able to go there and get it for like $30 instead of $50, but I had to demonstrate how poor I actually was to make that possible. So thank you,
Planned Parenthood. All these barriers for you to just, you know,
be safe and avoid having to use all of their services, right? So if that's really the goal here,
right?
And research has shown that education and access to contraceptive, if whether or not, however you feel about abortion, is the way to reduce abortions in real life.
And I think what you just mentioned, Emily, about sort of like being on your parents' plan or being low income or being a working young person, I think in one of the other attacks that we've sadly seen from this administration on women's care comes in the form of Title X. Title X is our nation's family planning program, and basically it helps millions and millions of low-income people afford much-needed health care. And these are things like birth control. These are things like, testing and treatment for STIs, including HIV. This is well-woman exams. This is, you know, breast cancer screenings, contraceptives, all of that, right? Mm-hmm. Like, these are things that people need. This is basic care of, you know, basic, like, maintenance of having a body, being a person.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, things that we all need.
Yeah.
And it's been in effect since 1970.
Yes.
Right? We've already fought these battles. That's the thing that feels
Absolutely.
The worst.
Exactly. And what's interesting is that this program is super popular, right? Like, Republicans like it, Democrats like it. This is not a program that people don't like. It's a popular program because I think most reasonable people know that when you live in a society, it's good if people have access to getting tested for infectious diseases so that people aren't running around not knowing, you know, they have a disease.
Right.
It's good if people have birth control. It's good if people it's good for society.
Right.
And yeah, I think it's really interesting that we saw a pretty good attack on Title X so early on from this administration. And just as an interesting sort of procedural note, I don't want to get too in the weeds on how this happened, but so basically the Obama administration rule that they passed right before he left office basically made it so that state lawmakers could not prevent specific clinics from accepting Title X funding based solely on whether or not those clinics perform abortion or not.
Right.
That's already in the law, but this Obama administration rule just clarified that, like, if you are a state legislator, you cannot ban a clinic from getting Title X funding because they do abortion.
Because they happen to also provide
Correct.
That services.
Because Title X is about, you know,
is well women treatment.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, basic healthcare. And this is what got us all celebrating as
yes.
Obama was about to leave office.
As he was about to leave office, if you all remember, there were a bunch of headlines like, Obama just signed executive order that will protect Planned Parenthood, even regardless of what administration we're in. And it was literally... This administration is wild to me, y'all. It's like they literally took note of it and was like, okay, bet. That's the first thing.
This
to go.
Is the thing y'all like?
Okay. Y'all like this? Okay, we're getting rid of this. And just to add more explanation onto it, the thing that I found the most hilarious about it, so when the debacle happened around repeal and replace and our Congress not being able to get that done because of the Freedom Caucus, literally they were like, okay, well, we're definitely still doing this whole defunding Planned Parenthood thing. And Mike Pence came in to cast the tie-breaking vote that would get rid of this protection.
Wow.
Like, that's how important it was.
Yeah, what's also interesting to me is that they did this the day after having this big women's economic leadership thing at the White House.
So that's fake news.
Fake news didn't happen. So he basically, got up and gave this big speech about how women are so great and we should protect women.
And we should care for them.
We should care for women.
They need our protection.
Unless they need healthcare.
If you need healthcare,
I cannot help you. Right. Yeah. Also, in the new plan that they put forward, they were like, also, we're going to make it harder for you to get maternity cares. So I don't know what they want us to do. I think they just want us to stay in the house and like read the Bible. And because
and
right now,
under,
these protections are popular, like you just said.
They're very popular
across the board, right? Because they actually put us in a place where, with the correct information, it actually helps women to better plan out their lives. And therefore, it helps everyone. It helps our economy. It helps our community. It gets you the information you need. And with things like Title X, it prevents more abortions.
Right.
That's the part that honestly boggles my mind. Like, we want people to be able to access the full range of their healthcare so that when they need to make an abortion decision, that they're also able to do that with the best information possible. And right now, people like Mike Pence are making it so much harder, regardless of how many meetings he has with women or how many times he's photographed having lunch with his wife. The fact of the matter is, he does not love you. And this is why one of the notes that I try to just keep saying during the election, when people are like, Trump is the worst, Mike Pence is actually, he's 10 times worse, mostly because he has had practice in Indiana. This man has literally found ways to not only try, and he has successfully defunded Planned Parenthood in his state, but he's able to do it in a way where he uses the law to get people caught up in litigation as they determine whether or not these things are even possible.
Didn't his state have this pretty epic, like, HIV AIDS outbreak?
Am I allowed to say that?
Yeah.
Hell yeah, they did. Like, of course that's going to happen when you don't provide healthcare. They literally had a breakout. Like, so when, and those are the material consequences that all these folks who are preventing this because they care about the babies, they care about the families, you're actually tearing apart families because you're giving, when you take away people's information, you are setting them up for a lifetime of just issues. You're actually, when you take away people's education and an outbreak around HIV and STIs happen, you're throwing them back into the healthcare system to be there constantly because they're sick.
Right.
Because you took away the information that would prevent them from getting sick, which should be the goal of our healthcare, is to actually get people so healthy and keep them healthy, not make it in a way that they're only coming to you when it's the worst case scenario, which we were all got all of those images. I remember growing up, I was much younger than before Obama took office, when they were just talking about the epidemic of people going to the ER instead of to their healthcare provider. And that's what we're going to look at if they ever succeed of actually repealing this, because people are going to need care no matter what. They're just going to find alternative ways of getting it, or we're going to die.
Wow. Unfortunately, Mike Pence is not the only one who we have to keep our eye on, really and truly. When it comes to enemies of women and women's health, there is a new player on the scene, Neil Gorsuch, who was just confirmed to the Supreme Court. And we're going to talk more about him in just a quick second. We'll be right back.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire. With the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On-demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
And we're back, and unfortunately, we've got another player on the scene we have to talk about. We know that last month, in April, the Senate went ahead and went forward with what's called the nuclear option, making it easier for a confirmation of a hyper-partisan Supreme Court justice, in this case, Neil Gorsuch, to be confirmed to the bench, to join our Supreme Court justices in a term limitless role as a Supreme Court justice. And as we know, the Supreme Court is very important in terms of places where a woman's right to choose has been protected and upheld in the past. What do we think about Gorsuch's addition?
Well, I think the fact that they pushed through one of the longest standing positions in U.S. government is absurd, through a thing called the nuclear option, which I was mentioning is some of the best political theater I have ever seen in my entire life. Because again, what the GOP is doing masterfully is learning all the rules and applying them to places where they don't belong. Mm-hmm. When Mitchell McConnell presented the nuclear option as a way for them to push through this SCOTUS pick, they're like, oh, this doesn't apply to that. And they're like, says who? Yeah. No, it does. Let's vote on it. We got it. We're going to do it.
And they've changed the rules of the Senate in a way that Democrats and Republicans agree is bad, right? Because historically, I don't remember what dead old white guy said this, but some founding father said that the Senate is the cooling saucer of the hot cup of coffee that is the House, right? The Senate is supposed to be the more temperate body in our government that helps put forth bipartisan solutions. And Neil Gorsuch is anything but.
Yeah. And I feel like they just, for 8 years under Obama's administration, they did nothing. And now it's like they want to be head of the class. They're going for honor roll right now. They're doing the absolute most. And it's scary because rules like this exist because if we remember during, I have no problem bringing up Obama's administration, even though apparently we're not allowed to talk about that anymore.
But we do.
Trump is allowed to talk about his election daily. But they accessed some of these rules because if you remember, he was so gridlocked. He wasn't able to do anything. So basically what is happening now is.
They didn't even vote on Garland.
Right. Yeah. What's happening now is the GOP is taking those rules. It's like they took note of everything Obama did and they're expanding it to do really awful things. Whereas Obama was creating, accessing rules or using executive orders, right? The executive order thing was thrown up in his face even by, Trump. Before he took office, where he used the executive orders because he wasn't able to get anything through. And now the GOP has taken note and is using those same kind of tactics, but stretching them to their limits to actually hurt and harm American people instead of protect them. So it's scary and we have to do the best we can to explain what's happening.
And I don't want to compare the executive orders, right? We can't compare the tactics of the Obama administration to this like new, totally like not like off the grid new future that they've just set themselves up for in the Senate. They sent Mike Pence down to again break the tie as a show of force for the White House to vote this Supreme Court justice.
And
in.
This should be troubling. Like this is our I don't want to
It's not normal.
This is not business as usual. It's very unusual.
Right.
And so I know that a lot of this it sounds very, very depressing and overwhelming.
It does.
But I need to like pull out because it's really not all bad. There are things that we can do to sort of help make noise about this. And I do think that with ACA, again, the reason why that failed was because it wasn't, you know, it was because of people like you, listeners, right? Like people who made noise, people who talked to their lawmakers, people who stood up and said no. And so I do think, you know, that should be seen as a kind of a victory, a small victory. So like, I don't want to make it all, at all seem like, you know,
it's not rosy, but, exactly. But it was, I think the failure of the Republicans' attempt to repeal and replace Obamacare is a show of strength for grassroots. And what's challenging is in this saturated news environment where it does get overwhelming, it does get hard to keep up with this administration's rapid fire pace of really dangerous policies and initiatives, we have to remember that women's health is foundational to the health of our entire world.
Right.
We have to remember to stay vigilant on protections that have already been well established, that have already been protected in the law, are under attack in a way that we might not even be able to fathom.
And just to add to that, and I know we're trying to uplift and I promise to bring it back to that, but also it's important to note, even in highlighting that victory of people standing out, that the ACA also didn't get replaced because of the Freedom Caucus. And the reason why I bring up the Freedom right. Caucus is because we're lumping them into the victory. And really what the Freedom Caucus is, it's their big push around the ACA is that it didn't go far enough.
Right.
So when that didn't pass because of the Freedom Caucus, and a tactic that I really want the Democrats to use is that they are pushing the Republicans to go further.
Right.
And why we need to be aware of them is because that's why these appointees matter, is because there are these little things that like trying to take away Title 10, trying to push through SCOTUS without any kind of real approval processes, are because they have vowed to make women just the undercast of this society. And we need to acknowledge the Freedom Caucus because they're not going to stop until they get what they want. And this is a time for our side, Democrats and progressives, to be the same way. We tend to concede a lot, or to find a middle ground where when we need to actually be pushing the most radical, our most dreamy legislation possible forward, because that's exactly what this other side is doing.
Right.
And if we don't, we'll find ourselves just in the middle where we're still having a conversation about the ACA and never getting to the point that the ACA does need to be improved.
Right.
That there needs to be more. It's not
uniform.
It needs to go further. It's not universal health care. Everyone isn't getting what they need from the ACA. And it's okay to talk about that while also saying, still, the GOP sucks right now. And they are not the answer. But we need to make sure the things that we're pushing through also directly improve the lives of the most marginalized.
Totally.
Because that is when we get to the point where we're celebrating Roe v. Wade, but we never got to repealing Hyde.
Right.
We never got to making sure that poor women had access to abortion care as well.
Right.
And that's what I see my role as an organizer and as an activist and as a communicator who speaks out a lot against the nuances in our movement, especially in the women's rights movement. Not because I think we're doing it completely wrong, but because I need us to do more.
We need to do better.
We need to do so much better than what we're doing now, because it's not enough to protect me as a 27-year-old working Black woman. I need to make sure that my niece's mom, who doesn't have access to formal education, who is on government assistance, is also allowed to see her life in the future beyond this administration and then some.
I see things. I agree with what you're saying, but I also see things a little differently in that if our Senate is now going to be able to vote things through with a simple majority, we have to remind Republicans that they know women. Some of them are married to women. Some of them are women. Mm-hmm. And if Republicans, especially level-headed Republicans, who I think make up the majority of that party, even though they don't make up the Freedom Caucus per se, level-headed Republicans, like moderate Republicans who don't want to see 50% of our society marginalized in a way that strips women of their basic access to health care, especially poor women. If you really believe in a Republican agenda that doesn't include perpetrating and going after poor women and women's health issues, make your voice heard. We need to tell Republicans who are in power That they have a responsibility to represent 50% of the American people.
That's somebody's ministry. That's not mine. Yeah. Someone can have that conversation.
Yeah, I totally
and I'm
agree.
All about it.
I agree.
And while a group
There's
of us is
both.
Doing
There's
that,
room for both.
A group of us is working with the Democratic Party. I'm also really invested in us coming up with alternatives because I don't. Yeah. I'm really invested. Again, we talked about the Black Joy mixtape about really diving into what I believe is a renaissance for people of color in this country, specifically Black people, of creating systems outside of our government that will serve and protect us. So that means like building community accountability, coming up with alternatives to the lack of childcare access, coming up with giving people direct information around sex ed since we know it's not going to be taught in their schools, creating freedom schools, free breakfast programs. Like, this is the type of organizing that we're going to have to dive into again, because this administration, literally my only hope is Maxine Waters, child.
Auntie Maxine!
As long as Maxine Waters is pounding, exactly, as long as she is pounding this pavement and doing her justice of saying these people have zero credibility, I'm with it. And I think that's important to notice too. And I believe they can all exist at the same time. My issue often is on the progressive side of things is making sure that we're also supporting the people that we find radical and not just stealing their ideas and putting it in a more comfortable framing, like a Pepsi commercial or a women's march, but actually throwing funding and throwing resources behind Movement for Black Lives, behind reproductive justice organizations like Sister Song, like Sister Reach, BYP 100, Advocates for Youth. The list goes on. I'm here to talk about them. Yeah.
You heard it here first.
I love it.
Amber Phillips calling for a new Black organizing renaissance.
Yes!
I love it. I love it.
So Amber, I noticed, so this is one of the things I really wanted to sort of plug while we were doing this episode. I noticed that you shouted out a couple of good organizations. And so one of the things, in addition to staying vigilant and you know, making a lot of noise to your elected officials, another thing that you can do to really combat this feeling of sort of overwhelming negativity coming out of this administration that does feel very overwhelming is, you know, blessing an organization that you like with a little bit of coin, right? So like thinking about
the coin.
Give the coin, right? Like thinking through, you know, who are those organizations in your, even in your local communities who are doing the work that you think is important or is going to be important for the next four years. And so you shouted out one of my favorite organizations, Sister Song. Tell us about Sister Song.
So I'm of course biased, but I don't care. I sit on the board of Sister Song, and it is a reproductive justice organization led by the phenomenal Monica Rae Simpson. And they are a national organization that is based in the South, and that is very important to mention because the Southeast is where you have very high rates of STIs and very little representation of government of people who are trying to change that fact. So yes, Sister Song is phenomenal. They also have a conference coming up this year in October called Let's Talk About Sex, and more information is coming out on that as well that I definitely urge people to learn more about. Again, other amazing organizations that I love who taught me about reproductive justice are New Voices, Pittsburgh and Cleveland, which is led up by Latasha D. Mays. And again, speaking of the South, I have to give a shout out to Sister Reach. They are located in Tennessee, and they're a phenomenal organization. And of course, mine as well, Advocates for Youth. We're not a reproductive justice organization, but we have a reproductive justice lens. And you may have heard of our campaign, the 1 in 3 campaign, or even our Great American Condom campaign. And we do working directly with young people to make sure that they have access to the things that they need and become leaders in advocating for what they need themselves.
And I think the same can be said to add it to the list is Planned Parenthood for
America,
right? Check it out. Donate when you can. Get in touch with your local clinics. It can happen. And there's a smorgasbord, right, of advocacy organizations out there. We can put our money where our mouth is. At the very least, it'll probably make you feel a little better in the face of this war on women's health. So we want to hear from you, Sminty listeners. How has access to reproductive health care and really all kinds of women's health care made a difference in your life? You heard our stories. You heard Bridget, Amber, and I share how access in the United States has made a huge difference to us. And for those of you abroad, share what your thoughts are on the Trump administration's pointed attack against women in the world and women here in the United States.
And Amber, I just have to thank you so much for being on today.
Yes.
You've been a joy. I can totally see why people call you the High Priestess of Black Joy.
Y'all don't get it twisted. Bridget is also phenomenal. She's the reason why I'm a digital strategist. She knows HTML. She's amazing. Emily, I'm also going to give you a shout out. Aww. You're phenomenal as well. But like, Bridget has just ushered me through so much, and I'm so honored to
have
you here
today. Say all of this.
No, never.
And again, Amber is joining us from Advocates for Youth, and she's also the co-host of the Black Joy mixtape. Amber, if people want to hear your phenomenal podcast, what should they do?
Well, you can go to SoundCloud or iTunes and Google Play. It's just Black Joy mixtape. We're on Twitter and Instagram as well, at Black Joy mixtape. And again, you can hit me up or ask me questions or tell me, you know, you were wrong about that on my social as well. And it's just at Amber J. Phillips, 2 L's.
I love it. And keep us posted on your thoughts on this episode and what you'd like to hear from us next. You can tweet at us at Mom Stuff Podcast. Find us on Instagram at Stuff Mom Never Told You. And of course, we love receiving your emails at momstuff@howstuffworks.com.
Tennessee just sounds perfect, whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or a ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.